News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
I'm John Gormley. Welcome to this hour of the radio program, and thank you for checking in wherever we find you on this day. Where will we find you at 1:30 this afternoon? Near something you can see. A smartphone, a tablet, perhaps at the office. A great piece earlier this morning with Brent Lokes. The number of offices that are saying to people, remember work computers? Because if you've got limited bandwidth in the office and people are watching the Blue Jays at 1:30 this afternoon, what does that do to office computer capacity? Never mind work capacity, but we'll get around that. Oh, and speaking of good causes, let me remind you right now, the 2nd of November is the date for this year's Gormley Gathering. If you're in or around Saskatoon, check out St. Paul's Hospital Foundation. You can get your ticket. It is the coolest after-work party, appetizers, drinks, a lot of the business community, a lot of people from NGOs, charities, others. We all just hang out, and we know that every single dollar for the Gormley Gathering goes to prostate cancer and the Lesson Irene Dubé Urology Center of Health at St. Paul's. It's a great cause. I am honored to host it, and I'm even more honored that you come every year. Now, as part of this, here at Ralco Radio, the big guys upstairs are donating $10,000 in the form of $1 for every like on 650 CKOM's Facebook page. So like us on CKOM. And $1 goes toward the Gormley Gathering, November the 2nd. Thanks, everybody. Okay, down to business this hour. We are going to start the hour with a very interesting topic that could not be more relevant for this province in particular, and at a larger level, humanity in general, than agriculture and where this remarkable industry is moving. Many of you know Patrick Moore, a renowned ecologist, environmentalist, co-founder of Greenpeace, and we've had Patrick Moore on this radio program many times in the past years. He left Greenpeace, and I always tell the story that he relates. The turning point was pretty well when they wanted to get rid of chlorine, which last time we all checked was still on the periodic table, but he is seen by many in the radical environmental movement as the ultimate turncoat. He supports nuclear energy. He supports GMOs, or genetically modified organisms. And he's in Saskatchewan right now, speaking in Saskatoon tonight, a free lecture at the U of S, 7 o'clock at the Neatby Timlin Theater. And it's called Agriculture in a Growing World. And when Pat Moore talks about what agriculture means, it's not grandma and grandpa's agriculture anymore. We find Patrick Moore in Regina this morning. Patrick, welcome back.
Thanks, John. It's nice to be with you always.
Tell me about the mission on this go-round. When you talk about agriculture in a growing world, you have a great number of how many people are fed by each farmer.
Yes, it's amazing to realize that, you know, it wasn't that long ago in history when somewhere between 70 and 80% of the population of a country was engaged in food production. And that meant that there wasn't many people to do anything else. And you can't have a modern society with 70 or 80% of the population growing food. And now it takes less than 5% of the people. And today, one Saskatchewan farmer feeds 155 people. And there's only one reason for that, is the application of technology and science. Science mainly in the form of chemistry and genetics. And, you know, when you say I parted ways with Greenpeace over chlorine, that was a science issue. And I don't think environmentalists should reject science and technology or the incredible advances we have made going from an average lifespan of 35 some, you know, a century or more ago in most of the world to an average lifespan of over 80. And with much better health care and much better life for everybody, at least most everybody, and with many countries in the world coming up now and developing. I've been going to Mexico for 45 years, and I have a place there that I've been in for 15 years, and I've seen that country develop from a peasant country to a modern economy. They've got a long way to go, as many countries do, but the whole world is moving towards the adoption of science and technology to have a modern lifestyle as opposed to a peasant lifestyle.
Patrick Moore is with us. He's speaking in Saskatoon tonight, 7 o'clock, the Neatby Timlin Theater at the University of Saskatchewan. You make the point of what you call pop environmentalism, and you refer to the issues of misinformation, sensationalism, and fear. And I think a lot of us, whether it's GMOs, whether it's nuclear power, how do all of these, which are essentially anti-science positions, become so dominant, whether it's in popular culture, whether it's in the media? Everywhere you turn, there are those three things of sensationalism, misinformation, and fear.
Well, in many cases, the issue is one of fear of something that is invisible, that you cannot see. With GM, for example, there's a fear that, at least they seem to be saying, that there's something bad in the seeds or in the food of GMO. But it's obviously invisible. They can't see. They can't say what it is. They can't name the chemical because there is none. They can't name what on earth harm this is going to do. And every science, health, and nutrition organization in the world with any credibility says that GM foods are safe. And look here in Saskatchewan. You have vast areas of genetically modified canola, beautiful crop. And that is being used by honeybees to make 80% of the honey produced in Canada, and all of those, well, virtually all of those canola fields, which are genetically modified, are also treated with neonicotinoids, which is a new insecticide that can be coated on the seed so it doesn't have to be sprayed aerially on the plants and is therefore far safer than previous insecticides we've used. And yet you have this big scare campaign about the honeybees all dying from pesticides and that the GM will be bad for the insects and all of this, when in fact none of that is true. It's working perfectly well, and it's actually improving productivity for the farmers and the honey producers.
We've had Mark Linus in this studio, and he, of course, was one of the people who used to dig up test plots of GM crops. He did that famous apology years ago where he apologized to the GM community, moved 180 degrees. But that appears to me, Patrick Moore, to be quite rare. I mean, GM opponents really dig in the more that they hear you speak, even.
Well, you know, it's just too bad because there's nothing to it. They have managed to make a mountain out of nothing. There isn't even a molehill. And so it's a combination of this sort of anti-corporate side of it, where they vilify seed companies like Monsanto for being some evil multinationals, when, like, maybe they should go after the people who are making machine guns and weapons of war and, you know, something that is actually harmful to society. Whereas the adoption of genetic science in agriculture has been extremely beneficial to agriculture. And now we have today announced out of Bangladesh, of all places, where they are doing a tremendous amount of work on genetic science in order to improve the crops there. They've approved the first vegetable GM crop, eggplant, which is ravaged by this shoot borer and resulting in insecticide applications five times a week in some cases, just to stop it from eating the whole plant. Now they have a insect-resistant eggplant, which is approved by the government and which is being given to the farmers by the government agencies. Today they announced that they are moving forward on golden rice in a big way. It looks like Bangladesh may actually be where the breakthrough is on golden rice to prevent blindness and death amongst millions of children and pregnant women every year. This will be a huge humanitarian breakthrough. And you've got Greenpeace and the anti-GMO movement against it, too, even though it can save 2 million kids a year. So when I say that I'm in favor of a humanitarian environmentalism, those guys aren't. They don't care about people. With the anti-chlorine campaign, they didn't care that there'd be cholera epidemics if you took chlorine out of drinking water. And with golden rice, they don't care if 2 million children are dying every year, as long as we don't have any GMOs. Well, there may be one good GMO, but they refuse to recognize that.
Patrick Moore is here. He is the founder of Green Spirit Technologies, but more than anything, he's the guy who, back in the late 1960s, co-founded the organization called Greenpeace. He left Greenpeace years ago and is now, among other things, an outspoken supporter of genetic modification in crops. He's speaking tonight, 7 o'clock, University of Saskatchewan, the Neatby Timlin Theater, and he's with us now. Now, he'll stay till the bottom of the hour. If you have any questions, maybe you're somebody who is genuinely confused about GM crops. There are many people who wake up every morning strongly opposed, and I get that. You may want to engage Patrick Moore in a debate, but you might be somebody who just doesn't know yet. You've got friends, you've got roommates, you've got everybody around you talks about GM crops in scary ways. Questions, debate, discussion, it's 1-877-332-8255 on the CJMECKOM listener line. I'm John Gormley. We return with Patrick Moore, and we'll talk more about golden rice. In fact, we had the founder of golden rice, Ingo Petrikas, in this studio last year. Maybe you missed that show. Golden rice is a GM product that is remarkable, yet it's being held back in much of the world by the environmental movement. We'll talk more about that. Stand by. Your calls, your feedback here on News Talk 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm John Gormley. Good to have you here. He has been involved in the environmental movement in many respects since it started politically when he co-founded Greenpeace. His name is Patrick Moore, and he runs a company called Green Spirit Technologies. He speaks extensively on a number of issues, and he's in the province doing a series of meetings and seminars on agriculture in a growing world. In fact, that's the name of the public for free lecture tonight, University of Saskatchewan, Neatby Timlin Theater. And a lot of that is going to spend time on GMOs and genetic cropping. Kyle and Wilcox, welcome on the CKOM CJME listener line. You have a question for Pat Moore.
Yeah, I'm a farmer from Wilcox here, and it's nice to hear some common sense science involved in this debate. But my question, reading online and reading about people, and especially you, people accuse you of being paid off by Monsanto to have some of these views, and I just wondered how you would respond to that accusation.
Well, I've never taken a cent from Monsanto, but I certainly don't think they deserve the vilification that they're getting. John, I just wanted to mention, I should have asked you to introduce me in the beginning. I'm with the Frontier Center for Public Policy now as
okay.
Their chair. I'm their chair of ecology and energy. So I just wanted to make sure listeners knew that. The Frontier Center is, you know, big in the prairie provinces, based in Winnipeg and to some extent also in Calgary. I believe they have people operating here in the province. So I've really enjoyed my time with them. I came on at the beginning of this year and have been writing op-eds and science papers for them on these environmental issues. But back to Monsanto, you know, they're not the only seed company in the world. Many companies like Bayer and Syngenta and others are involved in this same revolution in genetic science, what's called transgenics, where you take the gene from one plant which has a desirable trait, such as insect resistance or whatever, and you put it in another plant that doesn't have that property and thereby improve it from an agricultural point of view without any possible harm to anybody. All it does is improve it. And, the GM canola that we are growing here in Saskatchewan is an improved variety of canola. That's why the farmers buy it. And the antis have got people thinking that Monsanto is somehow controlling the world's food supply by producing seeds that farmers willingly buy. The farmer chooses which seed to buy. If they buy Monsanto seeds one year and they don't like them, why would they buy them the next year? Well, the reason they buy them the next year is because they're better and they like them because they result in higher productivity. And that brings lower prices to consumers. And, you know, they say there's no consumer benefits from GMO. If there is an increase in productivity and efficiency in the system, there's going to be benefits to consumers down the line. There's just no doubt about it.
If you've got higher yields, better quality, disease resistance, so you can produce more, you have more food to go around.
Exactly, and that will bring the price down because it means that the farmer is able to grow it the same amount of food for less money.
What are the transgenics that go into golden rice, and why are you such a proponent of this?
Well, golden rice is really the first truly humanitarian genetically modified crop. Rice has no beta carotene in it, which is what you need for your eyesight and for your immune system. And most of the staples that we eat, like corn and potatoes and wheat, have some beta carotene in them, but rice does not. Every green plant has beta carotene in its leaves, but the rice plant doesn't put any in the grain of rice, which is the edible part. And so Ingo Potricus, who you mentioned, and his partner Peter Beyer, they figured out how to insert genes, the modern version, genes from corn and a soil bacterium, which helps with the process of the metabolism of putting beta-carotene. It basically instructs the plant to put some beta-carotene in the actual germ, in the kernel of in the grain of rice. And it only takes then a small amount of this golden rice each day to prevent vitamin A deficiency. Now, the poorest of the poor in Asia and also many African countries, all they get in a day is a cup of rice. It keeps them alive because it's got the calories they need. It's a staple food, but it hasn't got the nutrition that they need. And so every year, about 2 million children die from vitamin A deficiency, a quarter to half a million of which have already gone blind as a result of vitamin A deficiency. It's the biggest killer of children in the world, and golden rice is a cure for it as long as you're able to eat the rice. The rice will cost the same as the normal white rice because all the patents have been given up by the people who created them for the whole developing world, which is the only place there's a vitamin A deficiency problem. So this is a kind of a miracle food crop that there was no way to get vitamin A into rice any other way than to take genes from other plants which already had figured out how to put vitamin A, or beta carotene is the precursor to vitamin A. Like corn, for example, the yellow in corn is beta carotene. The orange in carrots is beta carotene. The orange in sweet potatoes is beta carotene. Many of our foods have it, but people who just are living in poverty in urban slums and remote villages in the developing countries, they're lucky if they get a cup of rice a day. And if they got a cup of golden rice a day, they would live rather than go blind and die.
Patrick Moore, it is always great hearing you. Thanks for chatting again, my friend. 7 o'clock tonight, Meet Me Timlin Theater. And Patrick Moore is the Ecology and Energy Chair with the Frontier Center for Public Policy. Travel safe. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Patrick Moore joining us in Regina this morning. He's at the U of S tonight. I'm John Gormley. This is News Talk 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm John Gormley. Good to have you here. Greetings and thanks for checking in. So anytime Pat Moore is around, we try and grab him here. He's actually doing a series of lectures. I think yesterday he spoke to high school kids. He did a public lecture at the university. He spoke to some ag ministry employees, all of that in Regina. And tonight, he's in Saskatoon at the Neat B. Timlin Theater in the Arts Building at the U of S. You know, one of the beauties of Pat Moore, and longer ago than I can even remember, it was that long ago, I was a kid. I think I was just out of my teen years when I first met him, and he had the great big 70s afro going, and he was the founder of Greenpeace. And I was like, holy cow, this is the man. And he was, you know, the fervent, you know, anti this, anti that, you know, like Greenpeace is. And he's still a great environmentalist and an ecologist. I mean, that's his life. He's got a PhD in environmental science. But he says now that many of the people in what he refers to as the pop environmentalist movement are so poorly founded or grounded, in fact, there's no grounding at all, in science, that they play on fear, misinformation, and sensationalism. And the two issues that he takes on all the time that drive the pop enviro crowd crazy are nuclear power and GMOs. And even by extent, or by extension, it was Patrick Moore. If you saw the documentary, The Great Global Warming Swindle, which was put out years ago as the companion piece to Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth. And I think responsible school teachers would have shown Inconvenient Truth, then shown The Great Global Warming Swindle and said, okay, these two things are like diametrically opposed. Go off and do some science now. Do some research. Because The Great Global Warming Swindle was designed to answer every single point in the same order that was made by Al Gore, and there were a number of scientists, and one of them was Patrick Moore, and he was the first guy who I ever heard say this, and it was in that documentary. And I don't know Pat really well. I've just known him a long time. I've moderated a couple of presentations he's given, you know, so socially, you know, stood and had a cup of coffee with him, but here's what he said. And it's weirdly true. Like it seems to be coming true the longer you go on. His point is that for those people who remember the Soviet Union, and of course that all fell apart. The Berlin Wall came down in 89. By 91, 92, the Soviet satellite states had broken away. But if you grew up remembering the scourge of worldwide communism sponsored by the Kremlin and the USSR, they had satellite states all over the world. The most famous satellite state was Cuba, right? So anywhere there was a socialist state set up, the USSR would basically bankroll them. Because socialism doesn't work by itself. So, you know, these places, the Soviets would send in advisors, they'd send in money. They also bankrolled a number of people in the Western world. University professors, think tanks, various consultants, who were always undermining Western values. And they were undermining, more than anything else, capitalism. Because the greatest fear and the greatest tonic or scourge for the Soviet Union was a successful West. You know, when Germany was doing well, European countries, Canada, the U.S. I mean, when capitalism worked, and it was like the great P.J. O'Rourke the night the Berlin Wall fell. You know, he said, I stood there, tears running down my face and snot. And he said, I began as I wept. This was about people who weren't going to drive Ladas anymore. And people who weren't going to wear SHI blank blank running shoes anymore. These were people who decided they wanted to be like us. You know, and his whole thing was that the consumer and the corporate sense of what the West was about, initiative, freedom, that's what broke the back of the Soviet Union, right? So the Soviets actually had people here on the payroll trying to undermine the West. Patrick Moore's point is that when all of that ended in the early 90s, let's say you'd spent your entire life, you got your PhD, you spent your entire life attacking the West. Where's the one place you could go to try and bring down the Western economy? The climate movement. Because if you really want to meet the original Kyoto objectives, and those have been long overtaken now, what do? You stop productive plants. You stop power generation. You stop competitive economies. And the way you will cripple capitalism is by stopping economic output. So Patrick Moore said that. That was like, what, 10, 12 years ago now. And you know, when I meet some of the really, really rabid climate scientist types, just read them. These are dyed-in-the-wool, good old-fashioned Soviets. They want the mother state, and they don't want private property. They don't want private ownership. So Pat Moore has driven a lot of his fellow soul travelers in the environmental movement to distraction. A good example of one guy who hates him, and he's a hater, is David Suzuki. I mean, David Suzuki just can't abide Patrick Moore. Whereas when Pat was a young, you know, hippie starting Greenpeace back in 69, David Suzuki used to give them his blessing all the time. Okay, Howard in Regina. If GMOs are so great, why is there an epidemic of irritable bowel syndrome and gluten allergies where GMOs are grown? Immigrants that are healthy move to Canada, then develop issues with gluten. It's all GMOs. Howard, I think that is your opinion more than science. I appreciate your opinion. I respect it, but no, I'm saying. Sean and Moose Jaw, thank you, Patrick Moore, for what you say and what you do. John from Wilkie, what does Dr. Moore think of Suzuki stand on Golden Rice? I should have asked him that, but we've talked Golden Rice before. He is appalled that David Suzuki and his fellow soul travelers are prepared to prevent Golden Rice and let children die in Africa. And it's that simple. Golden Rice will give people sight who have lost their sight because of vitamin A deficiency, and in many cases, it'll give them life. And so what I think what you should do is not ask the Patrick Moores and the GMO people, you know, what you think. You got to ask David Suzuki that. You know, why do you oppose Golden Rice? Roberto in Regina, on GMO, whether natural selection, selective breeding, or gene transplantation, every organism on this planet is GMO. Further, have you ever noticed those most likely to benefit from GMOs are typically dark-skinned, and those most vocally against them are not? That's a good point. It's a bit of a comfortable Western world thing. Okay, where do we go here? Some of your comments. Oh, he lost credibility when he said there's only one reason why each farmer now feeds over 120 people. I don't know what your point was, why you were offended by that, but I get that that was your comment. All right, join the conversation. You may want GMOs. Louis says this, it blows me away how everybody wants the latest of technology in their cars, their homes, their medicine. But when it comes to food, they ask for the Stone Age. Very good point. 1-877-332-8255, you name it. We talk about it here and now. Okay, so Patrick Moore and GMOs. Now I expect GMO calls. I was laughing a few minutes ago on Twitter. I went TikTok, TikTok, because the virulent anti-GMO people never phone when Patrick's on, because he's the guy with PhD behind his name. I'm not. And you point out often my significant science deficiencies. They do, and it's true. Because all I know is what I read. When I hang around smart guys like Patrick Moore, I learn stuff all the time. Okay, what are we going to do? Did you see the story? And I thought this was fascinating. I'm going to get drilling down a little bit on this one. The granddaddy of political polling. If I asked you, and if you're of a certain age, you'd know the answer to this question. If you say political polls, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And this goes all the way back to the 1940s. I think the first campaign they ever did a poll was 1936. Gallup, the Gallup polling company. Modern politics, Madison Avenue, hence Mad Men, right? The advertising of Madison Avenue. All of this stuff turned in the earliest days to Gallup. Guess what Gallup is doing or not doing now in the run-up to the American presidential election? When I get back, what Gallup says about the state of public opinion polls. And it's going to surprise you. This is News Talk 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm John Gormley. What do I say all the time about public opinion polls? They may be accurate, and even that's a bit of a stretch. The night they are done, the night that person phones you, or the new popular way, which I think is bogus, these polling companies have huge groups of people who sign up for internet polls. And again, they take that huge group and then say, okay, you know, we want people from this region, you know, this demographic, you know, male, female, distributed this way. Well, the point is everybody's still signed up. You know, even my buddies at Incitrix, who I have a lot of time for. You remember the last poll in Saskatchewan? 90% of our people plan on voting. Well, that's inaccurate. If you sample the average public, the biggest number you're ever going to get, 70%. More often than not, these days among adults, it's about 61%. So, but see, again, why would you sign up for a polling company's group? Because you're interested, you're engaged. Of course, 92% of those people are going to vote. In the real world, nah, it's 60 these days. Okay, so what's the story about polling? We use polls for trends. If you aggregate, average out enough polls, all it shows you is a general trend. Like, is Stephen Harper, like, anybody vote for him? Well, all the polls are telling us as high as 37%, as low as 30. So where does Harper rate? Well, the Liberals are as high as 35, as low as 27. The NDP is as high as 28, as low as 21. So you're generally getting the sense that Harper's not done yet. In fact, on those numbers, he probably gets a bit more support. But who knows, right? So here's the story. Gallup, the most venerable name in polling, first U.S. presidential election, 1936, is getting out of horse race polling. It says both in the U.S. primaries and in the 2016 presidential election, it will likely still stay away from the horse race poll. So that is a poll of X number of thousand people. Stephen Harper has 37, Justin Trudeau has 35, the NDP has 28. Why? Because of methodological problems. In modern polling, there is too much that can go wrong. People don't tell pollsters anymore what they're really doing. The people you can find, even if you are doing auto dialers that go through every cell phone, then you don't know, like, is that cell phone located in the area you're trying to do the sampling in? It's just, it's really flawed. So I thought this was great. Frank Newport, he's the editor-in-chief of Gallup, tells Politico, quote, "We believe to put our time and money and brain power into understanding issues and priorities is where we can have the most impact." And that's smart. There will always be, I think, a critical need for public opinion sampling. But this idea of this breathless, what does Nanos say today, CTV and Globe and Mail? It doesn't really matter. One bit. Gallup actually admitted, and here's the other thing, you will never hear from polling companies. You ever hear them admit they're wrong? Well, if there's scientific rigor, if there's believable data, if there are facts behind the data, wouldn't you be the first to admit you're wrong if you're a pollster? But they don't do it because they all sell this crap. Gallup did admit 2012 presidential election, they were wrong. They admit Romney, narrow win, Republican, 1 point over Barack Obama. Obama won by 3.9. And that's significant. I mean, Obama had a comfortable re-election in that 4% range. So one of the reasons that Gallup has pulled away from this comes from Barry Kay. Now, Barry, I remember back in 06, 08, in those elections, Barry ran an aggregator at Wilfrid Laurier. He got out of it. And he's an academic, a political scientist, who studies polling. He tells the Canadian Press, the concern about the polling industry is absolutely valid. There is more demand for it than ever, even though the polls are getting less accurate. And he calls it entertainment. And he says, the news business is about getting readers and listeners and viewers. So this is all about trying to drive traffic for the news organizations that do this breathless daily polling. So you can tell your friends the next time they wonder about polling, is Gallup polling? I mean, they are the biggest and best. Oh, they're not. Methodological problems. I'm John Gormley. Stand by, the latest from the 24-hour News Center. And we're going to touch base with a well-known Saskatchewan citizen who marks the first anniversary of the death of a child to a drunk driver. More on that story next. Here on News Talk 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.